resources will become private. There is also information on how to contact the FCC to provide public comment. Information is at kboo.fm/opensignal2018.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Here to Stay, an artist book fair the weekend of November 2nd through 4th at Matter in Portland. Here to Stay is a celebration of publication as art. The opening will be Friday from 5 to 9, and weekend events include tea tasting, book fair, art exhibition, and more. Participants include Just Seeds Artist Cooperative, Signal Fire, Eberhardt Press, Works Progress Agency, and many other artists, writers, and activists. Again, that's Here to Stay, an artist book fair the weekend of November 2nd through 4th at Matter, 811 East Burnside Street, number 124 in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. And we're here with Tracy Schlapp and Daniel from the Folsom 50 Project. How y'all doing?
Great.
Great.
So happy to have
Thanks
y'all.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to see you in person. We can go one-on-one real quick. Just say something about yourself and then whoever wants to talk about the project.
Okay. I'm Tracy Schlapp. I am a visual artist and writer in Portland, and I make my living as a graphic designer, but I produce projects, and in this case, sometimes legacy projects. And so that's what this is, I think.
I'm Danny Wilson, and I'm, among other things, a musician. That's not my day job. I have another day job, 8 to 5. But a musician in my spare time.
At an undisclosed location.
Yeah. Unimportant to this.
Right on. Okay, so Legacy Project, Folsom 50. I think some people that are listening, I would imagine, know who Johnny Cash is. But let's give a little bit more context on that, and then we can get into how the project actually came to and developed.
Okay. I haven't thought about how to talk about Johnny Cash, actually, in that constant. One of the great classic country rock artists, actually, very much of a crossover artist, and started off in the 50s, and we kind of picked up on our project anyway with his, I think it was his best-selling album ever, which is the At Folsom Prison record that he recorded live in Folsom State Prison in California. And that was in 1968, same year as KBOO was.
Wow, all right. Yeah. So, hey, and here we are.
Yeah, and that's...
Right? Excuse me. Spindle twice.
Yeah, and then...
Cash was a real civil rights advocate and started doing those prison shows because he felt like conditions in prisons were appalling and wanted to bring an eye to what was happening inside.
Right.
Yeah. Do you want to say more about that? What was the model that he was doing these free, or he was?
I don't know that we actually know that or not. But I think it was 1955. Was it that he did Huntsville?
Oh God, when was it?
Maybe it was 55. But his first he had done a number of them. I didn't know this until we started getting into the research of what he did. But he had done a number of prison shows leading up to Folsom. It wasn't his first time doing it.
Oh, okay.
And my understanding is that prisoners reached out to him, possibly because of the song Folsom Prison Blues, which he had recorded earlier in his life, and asked him to come play. And so I think it was, I don't know, it was Huntsville, Alabama or Mississippi. I apologize.
Texas, I think.
Okay.
And but he really eventually, you know, Cash had some, you know, there's some misnomers about Cash. One was that he did time himself, and he caused a lot of mayhem, and he got into prison or into jail nights here and there, but he never did hard time. But there was this moment, kind of rock and roll moment, where his career was not, he was not doing well because he was unreliable because of his addiction. And so Capitol Records and his producer kind of took a chance on him, and this album was an opportunity to kind of exploit his bad boy reputation as well as record in prison. And it ended up having this great crossover between country and rock. So 50 years later, we're having a conversation about that record.
Yeah, I was in one of these music groups that I play, and we actually were covering that song, Folsom Prison Blues. And I had listened to the record before and a bunch of his stuff before, but doing it there, it really got me into listening to the record again and really start to finish. And I realized that how it's one of those records that start to finish are just great, unbelievable. And I just had the idea to take my band and play it, just go play it in a bar, just play it in some venue locally, just because I think people would want to see it. And I mentioned it to Tracy when I had that idea, and she, as usual, had a much better idea,
which was, why not do it in prison?
Right,
she immediately said, no, you should do it in prison.
Straight to the source. Take it to the source.
And so,
but you had a little background there that kind of had you thinking that way.
I did. I have a friend, Rachel Hillier, who teaches an Inside Out program at Lewis and Clark College. And anyone that isn't familiar with that, she goes in and she does a history class with Lewis and Clark students and students at Columbia River Correctional Institution. And a couple of years ago, she and I were talking, and she got this look on her face when she was talking about her students. And I thought, oh, that I'd like to feel that way about students. And so that's, you know, one of those little seeds that gets planted. And so when Danny mentioned this, I think that was the moment where I thought, well, this is a really interesting opportunity. It was somewhat after this last election, and I think a lot of us were looking for ways that we could participate in our society in a really positive way.
It's a key moment.
A key moment, especially for people in their 50s who are, you know, thinking about what it is to be, you know, responsive.
Yeah.
And not reactive, but create a resistance to something that is not okay.
So bringing in the next generation and get the Folsom 50, and we're here, KBOO's 50, and so we're here in the 21st century, and a lot of messy stuff going on.
Yes.
And so then, you know, we're using art and music to do these things. So where did it all go from there? It came from a kind of a performance and a conversation, and the next thing you know, you got this project and you're going inside now.
Right. We when she said that, I actually immediately said, there's no way they'll let us do that.
Because it's provocative?
Yeah, well, no, we didn't know.
We didn't know.
Honestly, we knew nothing about how the prison system worked here. And we felt that everything had gotten more strict and all this stuff. He could do it way back then, but things were relaxed and whatever.
It's true.
So we immediately didn't think that we could do it, but...
But somehow we still made phone calls.
Yeah, but so, yeah.
Phone call away.
But then, we just kind of got growing after a couple of days, and we decided to make a phone call or two and somehow got to Elizabeth Licarney at Columbia River.
Yeah, and she's really, my joke is, if you have to make one phone call to get into prison, you call Elizabeth. And she sat us down, and she explained to us about programming and the importance of programming to DOC, because this is where they have an opportunity to have people connect with people on the outside, and then for us on the outside to bring stories back out from inside. And she also gave us the understanding that the metro area has a lot of volunteers and has a lot of people and talent with time to help, but that she also got us thinking about the importance of getting out to Lakeview, Oregon, and to Ontario, Oregon, where it's 6 miles from the metro area. It's going to require
6 hours.
What did I say?
Six miles.
Oh. Yeah. If only. Yeah. Right. That it, and it requires a certain amount of resource to get out there. Mm-hmm. And so it really, in that first conversation, it fundamentally changed the project from let's just play Johnny Cash.
Yeah, backing up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we talked about it, we wanted to go play it, but as before we made that phone call, we had come to a hypothesis, as you like to say, of that there's something more to it than just the performance. That there's, you know, we didn't really know what it was. And so having that phone call and talking to Elizabeth really kind of helped drive the purpose of it home to us. Right?
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
So let's talk about that, what it looks like, because, okay, we understand that there's a collection of Johnny Cash tunes. Some of them talk about prison, some of them maybe don't. A lot of it just revolves around the fact that the concert itself was so prolific in that it happened inside, it was initiated by prisoners, right, which is, you know, first and foremost. And now you're going inside, you're performing some of this material. What other kind of things are happening and
first
discussions?
I'd like to say that we don't claim to be an expert on this at all.
We're ordinary people.
On what exactly?
On Johnny
on
Cash, on the prison card.
Oh, okay.
We're kind of an expert on what we do, but so we'll give you like our thoughts on it.
It's all right. You don't have to have a PhD to be on this program.
Good.
Definitely not.
So we got looking at the... at those songs, mm-hmm. right? And a number of people early on, after we had brought this idea up, after we'd already talked to Elizabeth, they would ask about the relevance of that music 50 years later, mm-hmm. which was mm-hmm. really what kind of got us to want to do this anyway, mm-hmm. because we started realizing that he picked all of those songs for that audience. They're not even all his songs that he wrote.
Oh, really?
And there's a number of other songs that don't make the final cut of that album, mm-hmm. Some of which, or one of which we bring forward and actually play in the show that we're doing. But they're all specific. He was intentional with what he did it and how he kind of organized the show. Mm-hmm. You know, Folsom Prison Blues is in there. There's songs about missing your family. There's being wrongly convicted and stuff that doesn't necessarily on the surface necessarily seem like it's a prison song, but was there intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Right, when you look at the context, it all comes out.
And so one of the things we did as a value is we recognized that bringing live music, live performance anywhere is really special, mm-hmm. but bringing it to an underserved population seemed incredibly valuable to us. And then the second thing was sort of addressing the context. And one of our band members said, you know, every time I go to an opera, and I did one of those when I go to an opera, because that surprised me and delighted me. But he said, I always read the playbill. And I thought, oh, well, I can make a playbill. And so I have a printing studio. I'm a letterpress printer. And so one of the values that we do is I wrote an essay that contextualizes Cash, sort of a little bit of the backstory, some of the songs, looking mm-hmm. deeply at Dark as a Dungeon, which is about coal mining, but it's also about, as you can imagine, the prison. It's a great metaphor, and mm-hmm. it's a great story and a great song to just kind of actually get right into that connection of what it is to be inside. So contextualize that. Make it into a little playbill. And then one of the values that we have in the show is that at the beginning of the show, I go and talk to each of the guys and hand them a playbill and shake their hands. And so that whether we're talking about 350 guys in a show or 50 guys that come to our show, and I say guys because we've only played one show at Coffee Creek. So we did the same with Coffee mm-hmm. Creek, but primarily we've been playing all the other prisons. But it's just that human connection of a friendly female face saying hello and welcome, mm-hmm. but also the booklets fit in the pocket of their back pocket of their jeans, and mm-hmm. they take them and they read them, they ask us to sign them, but it's something that they can take, a totem they can take from the show back mm-hmm. to their cell. So that's been a value. But in the performance of the show, then we also added what we call the talkie bits, which are just a few pieces mm-hmm. of that biography to help kind of set that tone, mm-hmm. that it isn't just, we're not just singing country Western music, but that there's a story here for you.
Right, right.
So, and then I would say the thing that's been most profound is that there has been this just, there's this incredible level of emotion that runs through the whole show, even with people that are kind of tamped down on how they want to respond, mm-hmm. you know, publicly.
The show, so how we do the performance is basically start to finish the Folsom Prison record. And we do a couple extra songs at the end. We've taken a little liberty with the order because he actually played two shows that day in 1968.
Oh, it was two?
Yeah.
Like a morning and an afternoon.
Yeah.
Morning, afternoon.
And there's I don't know how many extra songs that are on there, but there's probably another six or seven, maybe eight songs that are recorded that just didn't make the cut for whatever reason. And does them slightly out of order in the second show that he did in the first and all this stuff. So we tried to, if you listen to that record start to finish, he starts off with Folsom Prison Blues. It's really upbeat, goes through some other ones that are fast, and then kind of he stops in the middle of it and he sits on a stool and he does four slow ballad type numbers.
Hmm.
Really quiet, and it just brings the energy down
mm-hmm.
and kind of gets it to this low point before he comes back with sort of a comedy song to kind of let people off the hook. And so we mirror that kind of idea. Mm-hmm. We're not playing note for note recreations of the songs. Our goal is to keep the spirit of what he was trying to do, but do it in our own way.
Not playing the same guitar solo or
no, whatever. Not exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you'll totally recognize Folsom Prison Blues and Jackson when we play it as that. Those are pretty darn close, for example. But Dark as a Dungeon, we do it way different than he mm-hmm. does. But, you know, there's a bunch of versions of that song out there anyway. Go ahead.
For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. And we're here with Tracy Schlapp and Danny Wilson with the Folsom 50 Project, which they're playing the music of Johnny Cash inside of Oregon prisons. So definitely want to hear about the interactions and, mm-hmm. you know, just how that's going down. But first, you know, as you mentioned, right, you're not the experts. The only people that are experts on this show about prison are people that are inside right now and or have served time. However, I'd like to hear at least, you know, with your experience getting exposed to this and going inside and not being the experts, what are some thoughts and ideas about, I mean, going inside, what you know, aside from the programming you're doing, I mean, what is it that you're understanding more about the what I call the prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm. Well, from a human perspective, I've never come anywhere where I felt so welcome and appreciated. Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing to keep in mind always is that we have incarcerated citizens inside,
mm-hmm.
and these are people that have hopes and dreams and want to connect with someone. And there's so often we just, you know, I sat next to a guy the other day and we talked about our kids
mm-hmm.
and we just had a conversation like you would if you were sitting
right.
on the bus or if you were at the grocery store. And we take for granted on the outside our ability to have an ordinary conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of having someone who isn't your family, who doesn't work in the prison, who isn't religious or affiliated with an institution, would come sit down and talk to you.
Right.
That simple act is, I think, one thing that has really been my most important takeaway from that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems so simple.
Right, right. So even part of it for you is just like getting the whole misconception,
mm-hmm.
right, that people have about who's inside and why they're inside all that, right?
Totally.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I will admit, 2 years ago, I didn't think about it that much.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's way too many people like I certainly was, who it was sort of an out of sight, out of mind thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't watch those shows on TV, but I know about enough about the prison reality shows to see
pop culture.
Form this opinion of what it's like.
Yeah,
and you go in the first time and have a little bit of fear. I don't know if that's the right word, but you're apprehensive about it for sure. And to find them just so welcoming mm-hmm. and open and willing to talk, and you realize that the way it's portrayed, for whatever reason, for ratings or to get money to build the industrial prison complex, to scare people into doing that, is way off. And granted, we're getting people that can come to our shows that are on, you know, good behavior, or else they wouldn't be able to come. But still, there are people there who are remorseful. They know that they at some point hurt somebody else in the past. They want to be better people. Some of the nicest people I think I've ever met are inside. And maybe it's just that situation. Maybe they're just so appreciative. I don't know, but I'm taking it at face value. You know, they're all going to get out. Almost every one of them is going to get out. And to have that little bit of friendly face when we come in, I think is a helpful.
The connection with the outside world.
It's amazing.
Actually give a darn, you know, about the whole thing. And
the very first show at Columbia River, one of the men came up and said, "Thank you for making it feel like I wasn't in prison for an hour."
To kind of escape the immediate physical environment,
Because we've had, and I think I've had that five or six times at least, same exact statement out of people. It's a little bit of an escape, and I, from my own perspective, you know, necessarily didn't think about it before, but we've, since we've been talking about this and doing this, you know, the punishment is being in there. It doesn't mean that you're continually punished all the time. It's you still
forever damned in eternal flame or something. Well, that's a crucial point.
It does not help anybody, and they're all coming out. It's in everybody's best interest to not do that.
And that's also what kind of a piece there of like why we need more services and programming inside, and it sounds like you're just starting to get your feet wet but really getting into it now and seeing that there's a whole gap or vortex there.
Well, there's just a lot of possibility. You know, it's on the other thing that occurs to me is that there's an incredible brain trust of folks inside, and a great example of that is that Oregon State Penn, the Asian Pacific Family Club. One of the guys we've gotten to know came up with the idea of the Memorial Healing Garden, and they have in their club raised funds, an incredible amount of funds, and have put into place plans and now have broken ground on building a Japanese garden that will then be for the entire facility to use for meditation and just for just the humanity of having your feet in the dirt. And your hands in the dirt working in a garden. And it all came from within. And these guys don't have access to, you know, like you think how we just take it for granted. We pick up our phone and we are immediately connected to whoever we want to be connected to. And these guys are working with their really dedicated staff of volunteer resource managers who help. And we get emails all the time via a person that works at Oregon State Penn to connect with us. So they're doing so much, writing grants, all these things. And so that too is a really important thing to remember is that this is just a group of people that have a lot to offer. I know that often they're raising money from the little that they make. They'll raise money for community food bank. The gardening, a lot of the gardens at the different facilities, they will actually give produce to the food bank outside the community.
And just like one of our first visits to the State Pen and some of these clubs, finding out how there's 12 clubs, I believe, down at the Oregon State Pen.
Oh, okay.
Inmate clubs. Asian Pacific being one of them. But we found out that, you know, many of them have fundraisers for groups on the outside.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so they are thinking beyond themselves.
Yeah. They're thinking about their families and they're thinking about their communities. And so one of my new friends, we were talking at we've been going back to different talent nights and things just to kind of see, you know, just to support and listen and meet more people. And so we were talking to one of my guys, and we live in the same neighborhood, and talking about the park bench I can see from my window. Mm-hmm. And there's just this connection about when you're away from home, how comforting it is to talk to someone about home.
Right, right.
And so now I'll write him little letters to tell him the part, you know, the leaves are changing in the park and all that, just because that connection from home is so important.
Right, right. Just keeping hopes and spirits up and all that,
right?
Yeah. So yeah, and then talking about the interactions and other things of that nature, definitely just wanted to bring up what you had mentioned to me earlier, which is that, you know, we're sort of here today, aside from other cosmic reasons, right? But because you, our program Prison Pipeline was suggested to you by someone inside, right? So can you just say something a little bit about that?
Sure.
And you say maybe you didn't remember the name.
I unfortunately don't remember the gentleman's name. We were playing on the yard in Lakeview, Oregon, and it was a pretty cold night. And the yard's not huge, but it's large enough that it took me a while to walk the whole perimeter mm-hmm. to hand out programs and to talk to men. And so I went to the farthest reaches, because, you know, the guys that sit in the back of the bus also have to be talked to.
they can't
escape.
Right.
And one of the men and I started talking, and he was asking me, like, well, what are you up to? And I told him, he said, oh, you got to get on Prison Pipeline. Uh-huh. And so I thought, you know what? We do.
I just had to have a shameless plug for the
show,
of course, right? And you heard it first on Prison Pipeline.
Right there in Lakeview, Oregon. Hi, folks.
But, I mean, this is a I don't know, 75 by 75 mm-hmm. yard, kind of big square yard.
Yeah,
the band and I are up in the one section playing in this men's prison, and Tracy is walking without escort, right?
Right.
Oh
right,
no,
right.
I'm fully just meeting
and,
folks.
You know, it's just that sort of image that we have. It's the reality is different.
Something's gonna happen, and this and that,
And maybe,
and here you are talking to a guy who's like your, you know, is like practically or was your next door neighbor or something, right? With the same park bench, right? So it always kind of comes around full circle.
This is our community.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I brought it up. Aside from, you know, of course, the shameless plug for our program, and it's so great, but because of how here you are, you're both based in Portland, Oregon,
right?
And so then, you know, here you go, Southern Oregon, Central Oregon, whatever, you know, I mean, hours away, the bottom of the state, Portland's basically, you know, at the top of Oregon or whatever, and then, you know, you run into somebody who's like, you know, you gotta listen to this show, and you know, so it always comes back around, and kind of being able to like share, you know, those resources. And so I hope that y'all can continue to keep doing this work and, you know, at some point, you know, get back on the show or the station, you know, and talk about kind of what's going on. And as far as resources, though, for anybody locally or nationally, how can people check out the project, get in touch, et cetera?
We actually have, we have a grant for a show to do our program through the Regional Arts and Culture Council here in Portland, and includes a couple of inside shows. So we're going to play again at Coffee Creek with the Women's Prison on December 15th. People can't go to that, but we also, part of it is to do an outside show for the public. Mm-hmm. And we're actually, that is November 17th up at Lewis and Clark College.
3 p.m.
And people can buy tickets to that through folsom50.net.
Okay.
Folsom50.net.
And that's the website?
That is the website.
Say it again.
Folsom50.net.
Okay. Make sure Penny was grabbing their pen very quickly.
Yeah.
Any other social media links, resources?
Instagram, Facebook, Folsom50.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's all out there, right?
It is.
That's great. And for anybody who is in the Portland, Oregon area, this Saturday, November 3rd, 2018, there is a special panel mostly comprised of people who are former political prisoners and people who do a lot of political prisoner human rights and prison abolition advocacy work around the world and nationally too. And the panel is Free 'Em All Political Prisoner and Abolition Panel and Fundraiser for the Jericho Movement. And that features Ashanti Alston, who's a former political prisoner, Jihad Abdul-Mumit, Masaya Hosi, who also is Kazi Torre, and other folks from specifically the Jericho movement and other organizations such as the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. So that is this Saturday, November 3rd, 2018, 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue, Portland. It is all ages and disability affirmative event. Again, this Saturday, November 3rd, at the Social Justice Action Center, Political Prisoner and Abolition Panel. So, folks, thanks so much for being on. Hope to talk to you soon. For listeners, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland, and we're here with Tracy Schlapp, Danny Wilson with the Folsom 50 Project. Check it out. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline, like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thanks again to our guests. Big thanks to our amazing engineer, Mr. Michael Flictalis. Thank you again. Thank you for tuning in. Free them all.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Art-A-Thon with Impact on Saturday, November 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. Art-A-Thon with Impact is a 12-hour creativity and wellness festival. Young people are invited to participate in groups. In 8 hours, each group will create an original artwork that is connected to themes of mental health and wellness. A festival from 6 until 9 showcases all performances and artwork open for all to attend. Again, that's the Art-A-Thon with Impact on Saturday, November 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Agnes Flanagan Chapel at Lewis and Clark College, 0615 Southwest Palatine Hill.